Hello, welcome to another Scientology Fair Game, the podcast. Hello, Mikey.
Hello, Lily. How are you today?
I'm going to start answering.
COVID fair. COVID
yeah, I'm
good.
Going to start answering like that.
Yeah, someone said to me the other day, I'm COVID good.
Right.
I said, oh, well, that's appropriate. That
yes.
sounds good.
Yes. Speaking of COVID, would you like to introduce our next guest? Why do I keep saying next guest? Like we're on a couch and we have several guests a day. We don't.
Right. This week's guest. Yeah, there we go. Yeah. I would love to because okay. She literally is. I know you, Leah, and me. She is one of our favoritest people in the whole world.
Truth.
And we came to know her from the A&E Aftermath show, and she has become, I consider, a personal friend, her and her family, her kids, her husband, everybody. It is with great joy that we welcome Devin Graham Hammons, our champion, our guardian angel, our hero. When she was at A&E, she oversaw the Aftermath show. Hi, Devin.
Hi, friends. How are you?
Devin, what was your official title at A&E? Because I want to talk about the first time that I
met me.
Well, I cold called you.
Ah,
you remember that? Remember?
I do. I do.
So what was your official title there at A&E?
My official title was VP of Programming. And so we did both development and current, and I was a VP of Programming there.
And for those not in the biz, you were the vice president
of the shows. You know, right. there's a whole team of us and we all have our own projects. And at any one time, you may have a couple of series. And do you want to tell your story? You want me to tell my perspective of how I got to work with you?
I think it's best if you tell the story because I'm sure people are tired of hearing my voice. but Devin, how did you get stuck with us, Devin?
It is, I consider it one of the great good fortunes in my life. I actually was out on maternity leave having my first son, who you guys now know very well, and is 5 and a half.
Yep.
And I was doing development on another project in the Scientology realm before I went out on maternity leave, and I handed that project off. But I had started to do research in the topic because Going Clear had come out.
Right.
When I returned, that team and that interest had kind of grown, and they had a meeting with you, Leah.
Yeah.
And then they realized, oh, this is a way more interesting perspective. And you were like, if I'm going to do a show, I'm going to do the show. And I'm only going to do the show with Mike. And this is how it came to me.
Right.
And I came back. And fortunately, you had teamed up with Aaron and Eli, who were starting IPC. And I don't think even had like a brick and mortar building yet.
No, they were leased, like subleasing from a friend.
They were looking for their four walls. Mm. And we had done work together in their previous job. And I was personal friends, business friends with them, and had known them for many years and done a couple of pilots. And they had requested me. They said, we want to do this with Devin. When is she coming back from having her baby? And I came back and I walked into the building and they said, hey, guess what? You're going to do the Leah Remini show, the Leah Remini Scientology show. And I was like, okay, great. Fantastic. Little did I know.
So what happened?
I think what happened was the first thing was I got on a plane and came out to LA and we had a meal at the tower.
Here was the first thing, to be completely honest. Uh-huh. We had creative differences, not you and I. Okay. But, you know, they thought I was just an actress that was going to put my name on this very important series and that they were going to take it and run with it. And that I would just be the person who would be like, okay.
I'll go on the talk shows and peddle it.
Right. And well, I'll be the face of it. You know, my name will be on there. And I remember asking, I forgot who I asked, but I said, who is our executive over at A&E? And they said, oh, a woman named Devin. So I literally called A&E, like mainline, asked for you. Your assistant picked up the phone. I'm like, hello.
By any chance,
Devin available? Who's calling? Lee Remini. Okay.
I do remember that part. I do remember that part. And I do remember getting on the phone with you. And this is just, you know, emblematic of what the next 4 years would bring.
Right.
Is that I only had instincts for how to make a show. I had no idea about Scientology, regardless right. of what research I could do and learn right. And watch. Right. I had no idea. And so we would get on the phone and you were three steps ahead of me explaining what needed to happen and all that was going on. And I'm trying to executive produce you and right. say, keep you happy, mm-hmm. keep your ideas at the forefront, and also understand what the hell the show is going to be while learning a mind-bending amount of information. And also the information is mind-bending, right? Right. So it's not yes. just like, I'm learning all this. You're like, what? And you're trying yes. to figure out how, as my producer brain, trying to figure out how are we going to put this in an episode and how many episodes is going to be and what's the structure going to be and all of that. And of course, that IPC was steps ahead of me, but I am trying to figure out how do I say it back to my team. There was just so much information and so much to learn from you guys. And I would say my biggest impression and probably why we're closest is because I just spent so much time talking to you and listening to what I didn't know.
That was, I think, set you apart from most and still does, Devin, which Mike, you know, the thing is Mike has wonderful and true things to say about you. However, I would add to that, which was that you were our partner, this program, because since you have left and now you are an executive in the production company that also did our show that was partners with A&E, IPC, mm-hmm. and now you are with them and you're an executive there. So you have since left A&E. But when we were discussing our future, if there was a future, once you were leaving, there was no way we could have continued on in the way that we work because we considered you our partner in the show. This program wouldn't have been what it was without you, because you were literally in the trenches with us doing the show. So I just wanted to add that. Mike, you agree, right?
Oh my God, do I agree? Absolutely. Yes. I mean, it's funny. I came to this completely not a TV person. I had been on various shows being interviewed by people, but I was never involved in putting together a show. And boy, have I learned, or did I learn, an enormous amount in that mm-hmm. time. And particularly I learned that there is a lot of people in that business who, for lack of a better word, phone it in. They just mm-hmm. They've got a routine. They do mm-hmm. their stuff. They come, they think they know what they're doing. They, you know, and they do make TV shows and they're yeah. successful. Mm-hmm. Some of them, but that wasn't the people that we needed to work with us on our show.
Which is what made it you was, special. Yeah.
That's what I'm going to say. It yeah. made Devin particularly special because she engaged listened. With us and listened and yeah. wanted to know, Why do you guys think this is important? What is it about this that makes it, why are you so insistent that we have to have a show about this? Or why are you so insistent that we keep this in there? And, you know, I probably got very spoiled yeah. by you, Devin. And I've told you this subsequently. I I'm not sure that we'll ever come across another Devin in the position that you were in to shepherd a show like what we did through to actually making it to air. I'm sure from your perspective on the other side of this equation, this was a weird experience because, you know, I doubt that there are many people like Leah Remini that show up coming from a history of being in comedy, showing up and having a show that is as serious and as impactful as this. And not just that, that Leah was in, like, she wasn't just peddling that show.
No.
As you know, sitting in the edit bay, what, like, figuring out what's the next episode going to be? How are we going to do the interview? How's the cameras going to look? Oh, we got to get better makeup for these people so they look nice. We don't want them looking bad. You know, I don't know that, you know, probably from your perspective, you have all sorts of, like, oh my God, you guys were so weird. Or so different or so unusual too.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's not every day. It's very, very rare that your talent are your experts. That's a not to call you guys talent, but that you were on camera, you know, you had your own storylines. Remember the day we were sitting when we were still figuring out the first season and we found all of the car rides and we realized there's the Mike and Leah story. That's the runner through the whole thing. That's how they're reacting to learning this information. That's the present tense narration. Even when we're meeting people that left the church, you know, 15 years ago, it was important that you guys were talent, but you also were our source for all of the information, for booking all of the people, for getting the assets, for getting all of that, you know, you were. And so that's very complicated because it is personal to you.
Yeah.
Your executive producers on the show, your talent on the show, your cult survivors. It was so complicated to be able to have to talk to you about everything.
Right.
And do everything when it's also still your lives. It wasn't just something that was like your idea that was important to you and you're just dealing with people you care about. You were still being affected. I mean, it was just so multifaceted with how to handle it. It required being all in. It required it being the most important thing.
Right.
And you know, it was totally different than anyone thought it was ever going to be. But it was amazing. And it was, you know, just this queen of comedy coming to do a very serious cult show. Everybody was like, is this going to, what's this going to be like? And then it was lightning in a bottle and it continued. And it is a reference point 70 times a week for me in shows of all different shapes, sizes, and document. It was an incredible series, but it was very complicated, as you said, Mike, because you guys were the experts, you were the access, you were the producers, you were the talent, you were survivors, you were therapists to our people. Many of our contributors only were managed by you because of the trust. And so that puts even more strain on you because then, you know, just think about it. You have jobs as producers. You have to say, I'm sorry, I can't leave in that whole story about XYZ. But you're also the person calling that talent to say, or that contributor to say, I can't keep that part in. We can only fill 41 minutes. You know, it's so complicated, but it was unique and amazing and the best worst time ever.
And I wanted to ask you, Devin, too, what were their initial thoughts on the show? Were they scared to do the show? Were they?
Yeah.
The
you know, Scientology was scary, but at the time, what was great is just like all networks kind of go, well, we'll see what happens with the streamers because they're just like this giant stream. But at the time, networks go in ebbs and flows. They have big, huge hits and, you know, then they're a little more risk averse because they don't want to like kill the golden goose. Yeah. And then when you're down, it's like throw a ton of shit at the wall. And we happen to be in a time of rebuilding. Yeah. Elaine Fontaine-Bryan had just come back to the network. She kind of, we always say, like bleeds A&E. She has a real gut for what people want, and she was a big advocate for this series, but people were afraid of being sued. It's an advertiser supported network, owned in part by Disney and Hearst. That's scary. Those people don't want to mess around. They're not super risky, risk takers. And nobody knew what it was. You know, the thing about A&E is as a co-viewing network, it always had like a visual element of like accomplishing something, whether in the old days it was building something or it was getting somewhere. The idea that we were going to have a show that was discussing and talking, everybody's like, but what are we going to see? What are we just going to be everybody? That was the big thing in the room. It was like, we get how cool it is. We get that we've got this unbelievable access, but what is the show going to be? And we were like, we're going to figure it out. I don't know. Right, you know? Right. And I remember sitting in an early meeting and truly, Eli said this, he said, you just have to trust us, but we're going to build a preponderance of evidence against the church. That's what we're going to do.
Against Scientology.
Yeah.
And I remember he was so passionate. It was just us in the room. And Elaine and Rob were like, okay, great. And they walked out and I was like, what does that look like? Did that really answer visually what we're going to see on the show? But here we go, you know? Right. And if you remember, it started out as 6 episodes.
Yes.
And then as we started looking at stuff, it was like, oh, it's going to be 8. And then it's going to be 10. And then can we quickly throw together some specials? And we just couldn't get enough once it started going. But nobody knew. We just thought, this is something special. Let's figure out what it is.
Yeah.
And I think that's true.
Yeah. And I think that was the original intention. We, you know, we were under the impression that we wouldn't have to show much. Like what we were showing would be enough. And we had hoped to wrap the first episodes with, and then the IRS,
the FBI raided Scientology. We're reporting on that.
Exactly. And that's done. That's a wrap. What's next?
Right. Because we were going to bring it down.
Yeah. Because as you know, I had other things I wanted to do. I had other specials I wanted to do, other cults I wanted to, you know. So we were like, okay, let's look at this as like, you know, the first little. The first part of the thing, you know, on my list of life of things to do. You know what I mean? It was like, okay, take this down. And then there were other things that I was going to do. had I known. Yes. But now, what'd you say? You said we got moved up.
Well, remember this is just a little thing, but we were going to premiere in January and then we were still figuring out the first episode, you know, 17 rough cuts into the first episode, and we find out that we're going to air 5 weeks early,
right?
In November,
right?
That was maybe one of the darker days I had before the truly darker days started, and I was like, "Huh, we don't have a title for the series. We haven't gotten to a fine cut of the first episode, and we have, you know, 3 weeks to get this figured out and start airing." And we were really nervous. And I think everybody started to get cold feet and they were like, let's put it in this less risky time when people are busy in December and maybe people won't pay attention and we'll figure this all out. Right. And then it was like gangbusters and 2 million people watched the first night and blah, blah. And everybody was so excited. And then they were like, how many more can you do? And we were all like, I think at that point I was flying out there and doing 30 hours a week with you guys in person in the Bay.
Yeah. Yes. In the Edit Bay.
I would fly out on a first 6 a.m. We'd be in the Bay all day long overnight. Mm-hmm. And then the next day all day. And then I'd take a red eye home.
Yep.
And when they were like, let's do more. I think everyone looked at each other. And were like, when, why?
I know. Why? Right.
Why?
Right. I know. Yes.
But we were starting to figure it out. And like you said, we all had this feeling like this shit's good.
Right. Because there's always somebody willing to sit and talk. Right. And to, you know, state their case. But Scientology, there was no one ever from Scientology willing to come on and talk to us ever.
That's correct.
And then let's talk about the fair gaming of every contributor. Like you mentioned, there was always a website that was put up on the contributor within seconds of them knowing or airing, because there was, you know, there were times when they weren't prepared. I don't know. Mm-hmm. They didn't exactly know who was going to say what. And so they put up, you know, they would put up a website or have it waiting to go to when it aired. But have you ever experienced that? Was that shocking to you? I mean, it did end up, Devin, where Scientology's front group showed up to the offices of A&E in New York.
That's right.
But for as a network, they still have these websites up. You know, our pictures are up. You know, the president of A&E, you know, their pictures are up. My picture's up. I mean, this is what, have you ever seen anything like it? Yeah.
Never. You've never seen anything like that. You've never seen the amount of effort and pushback. And then still, like I said, the simple refusal. We followed the journalistic integrity of the show and asked at every turn, would you like to participate? Yeah.
Yeah.
And they didn't want to participate. They just wanted to harass. And that's right. what they did.
Right, right.
Hell, there were people that even put up billboards saying Scientology's invited to go on the aftermath. Anyone, anytime, anywhere.
Yeah. So much reading. I mean, I got into TV not to have to read. So much reading.
Well, I actually want to say, Devin, because you know my daughter went around and said, oh my God, my New Year's wishes come true. Thanks to our hard work, A&E finally canceled my, you know, wife-beating father's TV show. And thanks to all the hard work we put in, they managed to cancel the show. And it's like...
so sad. It was not canceled. I think, you know, we could have continued to do the show for a lot longer. But I think when you look at how special the show is, it was nominated every season for an Emmy. It won in the first season. It won in the final special. Yeah. It was nominated every single season it was on the air. It was a jewel in the crown at the network. They loved it to pieces. It's a tremendous amount of work and resources. You know, obviously you guys know I watched every cut with 2 to 3 lawyers. and sadly, you know, it's not a 4-cut show. You have several cuts. Mm-hmm. It took a tremendous amount of time and effort and money to make the show so it could be legally sound and researched and protected and all of those things. Mm-hmm. I think the reason that we ended it is because we had said what we had to say. You know, we had so much to say in between all of the policies we covered, the people we put up there. You guys, I mean, Mike was living in Los Angeles for
away from his family,
away from his family for more than half the year. You were turning down acting jobs to do this show. And I think when we all came together and said, you know, what are we going to continue to do this? Or have we said our piece?
Right.
It was, we had said our piece. We had covered the big stuff. We didn't need to keep going. And, you know, I think it was more of a group decision and things were evolving. You know, I was going to leave. And that was a big thing in terms of just you, me, and Mike.
Yes.
But it was definitely 1,000% not canceled. Yeah. And as we can see, it continues to grow in popularity on Netflix.
Exactly. Right. Yeah, and just to add to that, Devin, you know, the collective was, you know, especially from our perspective, from me and Mike, it was getting really taking its toll as far as what we could do and not do on camera.
Sure. And therefore, you know, after 36 episodes and a whole bunch of specials, what was important to you guys and how you wanted to continue to try and make a real world change. And we had made a real world change, but making more of one was not something that the network that's ad supported and has to operate in certain ways was going to be able to continue to show on television. Is that a fair assessment?
And completely
perfect.
And you guys have, this is your life's calling and you continue to do this great work. And that was not something that we could put cameras on.
Right. Because we were doing a lot of things other than, you know, being the faces of it, being in the editing bay for every edit, story editing, vetting your own piece, you know, exactly. Like, you know, being therapists, like you said, you know, we couldn't, we, and the stuff that we were doing behind the scenes, you know, was, you know, what we wanted to show more of that. And we need, you know, we couldn't, sitting down with another person, hearing their horrible story without being active would was going to drive us insane if we continued in that way. And I think what you said is very important. We did something very important. Like, we went from people going, they deserved it, they were stupid for getting in that thing, I could give a shit about these cult people, you know, to people caring. I mean, like you said, we've won many awards for the show, really, and this goes to the contributors completely, but Hollywood saw it and said, yes, we're going to acknowledge the pain that these people have been through, and this is not something to be laughing about. And they people started caring, And I think that was a huge undertaking. And I think we, like you said, we achieved that. And, you know, we need to take the next step.
And if I can just add to that, Leah, yeah. You know, this was something we always said, and it became, I don't know, emblematic of our relationship, you, me, and Mike, was you guys had such a deep understanding. And for me as the network executive and also as your partner, I would say, but you've got to make me understand how it could have been me.
Right.
And, you know, up until this series, it was a fascinating thing. It would sell the covers of People magazine, you know, the people were intrigued, but it was this niche subculture that nobody felt that they could understand.
Right.
And through our episodes and through our series and through the explaining and the humanizing of all of our beautiful contributors, everybody became so aware that this wasn't dumb people. This wasn't, they deserved it. This was, holy crap, that could have been me. Right. And that was a real world difference. That made people really understand this isn't something that I have no idea about. These are people on the street in every city that our audience is in.
Agreed.
Yep. Devin, what surprised you the most? In everything that you had to deal with on making the show, what was it that surprised you the most?
Surprised me the most was that this happened, that this organization exists, not just in America, but in many, many countries around the globe. And, you know, you could talk about People Magazine. This is no... two people found in a basement after 10 years gets 100 hours of press coverage and all of this stuff. Yeah. And the content and the stories that we're hearing are so filled with gray in terms of what is technically illegal or legal when you're just talking about like money and taxes, but the real abuse and the real damage that was shocking that it happens and people are kind of aware of it. And that we say, well, you know what, if it's a religion, then you're choosing to do it. And then that's on you.
Right.
It is kind of, that was very shocking to me. And I think the other thing that was truly, truly shocking to me is, and getting to know you guys both so well and see how incredibly intelligent and feeling and down to earth you are. I never understood the power of brainwashing. I really didn't. I could understand it if you were captive in a isolated tank somewhere and people were just telling you the same thing over and over. But walking around, Leah, you being a global celebrity all over the world, how could you not see the heartbreak of being lied to and the heartbreak of what they had given up in their life, what they had missed, what they had believed, you know, that total loss of footing was a common of self was very common in everybody that you introduced us to that. And I think what makes you guys so tight is that you were collectively taken advantage of. And that's such a simpy phrase for like, you were robbed and you were robbed and you were totally abused. And that is so it was so intense to learn that.
Right. And then like you said in the beginning of the program, you said like, you know, that you came into town, right? Because we had that long conversation where I was pleading my case to you, like, here's what the show can't be about. It can't be about me. It can't be about celebrity. It can't be about, it can't be about the beliefs, you know, like the beliefs only in that those beliefs are, you know, toxic and abusive, right? But it can't be about the things that people, you know, like to make it fodder.
Sell the cover of
people. Yeah, exactly. Right. And you came into town, you flew 3,000 miles. We went into my garage with a bottle of wine and opened the cabinet to show you the breadth of what this really meant to be a Scientologist. I showed you the price list because still people make the they try to connect Scientology with a real religion, and I'm like, you understand there's a price list. So you have a price list when you walk into your church where they go, well, you can't get the service unless you pay the preset price, and because of you know, inflation,
your early bird special, and
yeah, exactly,
get somebody else in, is asterisks all over the place.
Yes.
All the deals you can get.
Right. And to Mike's point, does your real religion have a part of the organization that makes it its business to destroy your life after you leave and speak out about what's happened to you? So you came and you saw, and again, I'm going to reiterate what Mike said. What makes you so special as an executive, as a person who is in our business, who is making TV, who's making documentaries, funny or important, it doesn't matter. You are one of the rare people who listened, who said, I might know how to produce television, but I don't know this. I don't know what it means to produce this type of show. And that's what makes you special. And IPC is lucky to have you. And we were lucky to have you. And our contributors were lucky to have you because, you know, it wasn't easy doing the show.
And I just want to tell you, to be honest, I'm on a project that couldn't be more different that we're selling right now about fashion and models, but it's based on a book. And we'll write up and I'll write up the pitch and I'll send the things. And our author will write us back and be like, I understand you know how to sell this, but just to be historically accurate and to know what was going on, I'm going to give you my notes. And I'm like, that's right. I don't want to be inaccurate.
Right.
It's so much less emotionally infused when we're talking about fashion than when you're like, no, there's 40 people in a fucking hole. You got to be right there. You know, like there's all of that that's real.
Yes.
But, and it did, it added, you had to educate us about Scientology.
Yes.
And we had to educate you that this is the cut, you know, it's only 41 minutes. They only give us this many times. We gotta get through some of this.
Yes. And you were great at that. You were great at saying, Leah, listen, I get that you guys know Mike has been in this his whole life. You have been in this, you know, you are advocates for the contributors and, you know, Scientology, but know that people don't know that that's not in there. You guys know that you got, and you're passionate about it, but you have to keep your eye and the bigger picture of the episode and what you're trying to communicate. And, you know, I'm still learning that, you know, I'm still trying to ease into that. Cause if I know something, if I see something, I'm like, oh, you gotta say this. Oh, but also you gotta say that. And you gotta let them know this. And you know what also happened to her, you know, because it's such a, you know, so passionate, but you know, I would be the same person. Cause we've been accused of, look, you guys, we know you're where I'm like, I would be passionate about the fashion show that you're doing. I would be just as feverish about it. Like, that's not true. You know,
this whole part.
Yes. But it's a learned art, right? Between like what, you know, what's important, and you don't need to tell every detail of every story, and you got to learn how to edit yourself, and you got to learn how to, you know, keep your eye on the bigger picture, which you did amazing of. And we couldn't have done this, like I said, without you. And IPC and anybody who gets to work with you is very lucky to have you, because you care. And that's very, very rare, Devin. Very rare. Haven't experienced it since.
Well, we're in an industry that maybe, you know, caring isn't the first prerequisite. But the good people and the good stuff, you do care. And I have to say, I've never met anybody that cared as much as you guys. Mike left his family.
I know.
And basically, so did you. And so did I. And so did, you know, all the people that had to be in the Bay for those long nights and make this show and make it right. Everybody did. And, you know, I think the caring came through, and it was an impossible process because of the amount of learning that everybody had to do.
Yes.
And I think everyone is bonded in blood from that. You know, we really came through it. And there was some very dark days, and there were unbelievably wonderful days. And they never were the same day. You know what I mean? You never got through shit and go, well, at least we finished that. You were like, oh, that hurts so much.
Yes.
But then so much, you know, I think we all look back and say, like, that was so hard, but my God, what a beautiful show. And, you know, when we talk about what's special about it, you could go on for pages, but just, you know, just on the very surface, to be a premium show that made a real world difference and then lasted for 36 episodes, nobody else does that. Nobody else does that. And it's a real tribute to the caring that everybody had and the amount of shit that nobody knew. And, and I mean that, you know, like, this is not just a, hey, we'll cover it in a quick 1.5 hour doc.
Right.
There is lifetimes, whole people's lifetimes that needed to be told in this series.
Well, we thank you, Devin. And we're so glad that, you know, all, if you haven't seen The Aftermath, you could still see it. It's airing, all three seasons are airing on Netflix now. And I'm so happy to have more eyes on it. And, you know, we're still getting tweets today, like just finding your show. And, you know, we're just so grateful to you guys, to A&E, IPC, and to Disney for not caving on us.
Exactly.
And Hearst, and you know, because it was a ballsy show to do, and we really appreciate you guys doing the work, and it's out there now for more to see. And we know that people who are thinking about getting into a cult or Scientology, we're doing the work. It's still doing the work. And so thank you, Devin. Did you want to add anything, Mike?
No, I just wanted to reiterate something that Devin said. That, I mean, we're talking to Devin because she's our fave. She's like, she's our, the queen of our show for us.
Oh, stop.
There was a lot of other people who we came to know and love who participated in this. I just wanted to reiterate that.
Because of course.
I look back and I see, and I think about the things that some of those people did in order to make the show happen.
Yes.
And they were pretty amazing.
And
the guys that sat there through day and night in the edit bays, and the people that it was like a,
well, they were getting paid, Mike. We were not getting paid for editing. We're not even on the credits. Okay,
you're not paid exactly. for being story producers.
Exactly.
I know.
But Mike,
Leah,
it's not. But I also want to add this, and maybe Devin, our last little bit here can be, because there were times when I felt, and I know Mike felt, that we were not being respected. In because we didn't have the resume, right, as far as being editors or being story producers or, you know, tried and trusted EPs of a show. You know what I mean? We don't know how to put a crew together. We don't know how to do a budget. We don't know, you know, we don't know those things, and I'm not even implying that I do. But I do want to say something about the people out there who do have projects, who are being told no by their agents, who are being told that, you know, or don't even have an agent, but have projects that they're passionate about, or even an issue that they're passionate about. You know, so often we were turned down every day. There were days where we were, you know, people would attempt to shut us out of the of this project and our show. And, you know, I was really defeated in moments on this program. And even since, you know, I have, you know, now I have, you know, I do have a producing agent, and they're not doing shows about that. And, you know, you get, and I just want to say, like, and by the way, you see 50 of them come out like in the next week. You're like, oh, apparently these people are doing shows about that, or are making movies about that, or there is somebody speaking up about that. Like, you're not. Yeah. And I just want to say, like, and maybe you can say from an executive perspective, but I want to say, like, I feel like giving up all the time. Very, very often, Mike and I felt like giving up many times. And I just want to say to you guys who are, you know, dreamers, or, you know, have something in your heart that you want to expose or be a champion for, just don't take no for an answer. Just keep going and believe in yourself. You don't have to have a fucking resume. You know, you got to start somewhere. And just keep fighting for yourself. And even if you have an agent who's a bigwig, and, you know, he seems or she seems to know everything, like, they either get on board with who you are and what you're passionate about, or you fucking fire them and you take the chance. And that's it. Like, I just want to say, like, it's not an easy business. It's not easy to do things, you know, do the right thing. It's not, you're going to take shit. You're going to get canceled. You're going to get yelled at. You're going to get fired. But, like, you know, you're going to be told no. And
you're
going
to be told no. You're going to be told no. But, you know, Leah, I would say, I would circle this back to what you said in the beginning about, you know, the specialness of our connection was about listening. And you had a saying, you said first season, and I think it came around by third season that we were saying it, you know, everybody would say it in different rooms, but it kind of became a theme for the whole series And that's what made us all have to lean on each other. It was used to say when we were learning about Scientology, you don't know what you don't know.
Right.
And we would take, you know, I could take a little bit of information, be like, okay, I can structure it. You're like, but that's not everything. You got to keep listening. You got to listen to the whole thing. Right. And it was, and your brains were the same way. It's like, okay, I get it. I'm going to be able to give these, I'm going to make it this way, you know? Yeah. And, but then I'd be like, well, if we steal that money from that line, there's a limited amount, you know, if we take this time to edit this episode, another episode gets, and we were always kind of coming from where we were. But at the end of the day, the reason we have such fondness, besides the fact that we're also incredibly hilarious and good looking, is that we had to lean on each other to learn what the other people knew. And we had to collaborate that way. And we had to learn, like, all right, I'll take your fucking no now, but tomorrow don't say no to me.
Right.
Fine. I say yes today. You can say no tomorrow, you know? Yes, and it was always like, I'm going to give on this. And that was what it was. And we had to work with the time frame, the budget, the assets we had to make something that made you guys feel good, that made a great show, that made a sense in the budget and the time frame that we had to do. And it was all collaboration. And it really was listening to your partners. And it had to be as important to everybody to make it work.
And then as an executive who now is continuing to create content, continuing to listen to pitches, Devin, what can you say to those who are listening who have aspirations in this field, who have been told no many times? Do you have any executive advice?
I do. As someone that's listened to pitches for the last 17 years of my life, the best ones are the ones that are most passionate.
Yeah.
You know, you don't want to sit in a meeting where somebody comes in and goes, okay, I have 8 shows for you today. All right. So which one would you like? You know, would you?
I can give you this. You know? I can give you that. Yeah. Right.
Well, we all know the three of us have a special affinity for like a diner menu in real life. And you're like, I'll take medium food if I can have like disco fries and eggs Benedict in the same meal.
Yes, exactly.
But like TV
and a knish.
And a knish.
Yeah.
And you know, a chicken fried steak to go.
Yes. Yeah.
But it doesn't work that way in TV. You want the very best of that. And so passion can never really be discounted. Now, sometimes somebody's passion isn't formed or it isn't quite packaged right or isn't the right timing or just doesn't quite get there or whatever, whoever you're pitching, whether it's an agent or a network or a producing partner, it does have to have a little bit of that magic element of right timing, right thing. Somebody sees what you see, but no, don't let anybody ever discount your passion. That is a huge, huge piece of every single thing that's successful. Nobody ever goes, I never really believed in it. It became a huge hit.
Right.
Nothing ever just like happens to creep up and really work. Anything that everybody loves, it took a major amount of passion to get there.
Yes. And a lot of no's. I mean, just because somebody says no to you doesn't mean that it's not good.
That's right.
And don't give up.
That is absolutely right.
Well, Devin, we love you.
We
miss you. We miss working with you, although we talk all the time. So I don't
know. I miss you guys so much.
Do you miss my notes, Devin?
Do I miss your notes? I do. Honestly, I've never seen notes like it. I've never seen notes like it since. And I loved it so much. I will just say, when we refer to the famous one passionate long 100 and plus some numbers, I remember saying to my husband, I just got this many notes. And he said, are there cave drawings in the middle? I said, no. Because he said, I can only imagine that in the middle of it, she just had to draw what she wanted to be.
Oh, dear.
I love it dearly. I love you dearly.
We love you, Devin.
The show wouldn't have gotten there without all those notes. I love you guys. I miss you. Thank you for having me on this podcast. It was so fun.
Oh, good. We're so glad. Thank you for joining us. And until next time, thank you for listening.
Okay, bye.
Bye.